Welcome to the Minibake Gang Podcast, episode 297, and I'm on with Tim Elliott. Oh, wait, whoa. I'm Steve Borsch. I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, man, it's groovy this morning down here.
Graham Thickens.
Yeah, I'm groovy, too.
And Phil Wilson.
I overslept, guys. I'm degragifying.
Yeah, that's all right.
Is this like from a 70s porn movie?
Yeah, it sounds like it, doesn't it?
this music, it just sounds like it.
Have to be a little slower, I think.
Yeah, probably. I guess so.
Similar, though.
Yeah.
Cruising down Santa Monica Boulevard or something, yeah.
Oh, you guys. So, you know what?
What?
I have to ask, do you guys think we're cool?
You know.
Not us, but I mean, just Minnesota in general. And
I got to tell you,
I
spent a week in New York last week, and I got to tell you that everybody here believes that it is the coldest place on earth. I swear to God. And I tell you what, I think we do have to own it. So we're talking about this movement among, started by Governor Dayton's sons. About naming our region North rather than the Midwest.
I like it.
And I'm on board because I've always said you got to own it. You just got to own it. When we were talking about the South by Southwest thing, doing a North by Northwest or something like that, this was like 6 or 7 years ago. I don't know if you remember that, Steve.
I do.
Yeah, I remember.
You remember that, Graham? Yeah, we were talking about doing something like that. And it was, you know, I was saying, yeah, you got to do it during the middle of the winter because you got to own this stuff. I think this is great.
Yeah.
Well, if you've ever been to... part of the article was that, you know, talking about the people's surprise when they go out to New York and some of the she shops out there, Duluth packs are sitting on the shelves. And if you've ever been up to Duluth and looked at the store, gone into the store and poked around, oh my gosh, have they got a lot of depth, nice stuff. But then you got Red Wing shoes and.
But you know, the Duluth Outfitters actually has a place down here in Burnsville. So,
oh really?
Is it Burnsville? I think it's Bloomington. Sorry, it's down in Bloomington.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The Duluth Trading Company. You mean?
Yeah. But is that's who it is? Duluth Trading Company. Yeah.
But I think it's funny that they can't keep this stuff in stock. The stuff with North on it.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah.
The hats. Those stocking caps.
Unbelievable.
So anyway, these guys. Is it Andrew and Eric Dayton started this last year. They ordered a bunch of stocking caps that simply said North on it. And now it's sort of taking off and they run a store in the North Loop called, what is it?
Askoff Finlayson.
Askoff Finlayson.
Which is named after the road sign, the exit sign near their childhood cabin.
Oh
yeah.
Way up North.
Interesting.
And so anyway, again, speaking of sort of a she shop, so they do sell very unique things. I don't know. We'll put a link, obviously, to the story in the show notes. But the Right Field duffel bag. Did you see this, you guys?
Yeah,
this is made from the right field wall of the Metrodome.
Yes,
the sheet that they put up there. I think that's great. I think that's killer. So. Yep. Obviously, I've got to get to this store and
look at
stuff I can't afford.
They have limited inventory, I'm sure,
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
And the Faribault woolen blankets, the way that plant has been brought back is multiple times. Cool story.
Have you guys been to the Red Wing shoe store down in Red Wing?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
That's a really nice place.
Yeah. Well, one of my fraternity brothers was Bill Sweezy, whose grandfather, great grandfather, started Red Wing Shoes, and he was CEO for a while. And, you know, there was a period of time there where it looked like Red Wing was not going to make it.
Yeah.
I mean, stores were downtrending and everything else. And then all of a sudden they started doing really well in Latin America. And he was really instrumental in pushing for, international kinds of business. And then all of a sudden, you know, stars started wearing Red Wing shoes and it's cause the quality's so high.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they did pretty well.
You know what? I'm going to make a suggestion here right now. And now Steve, you may disagree, but you know, Minnovate, our sort of tagline is showcasing Minnesota technology and innovation. How about we add the word North in there somewhere?
Nope. We could do that.
Or cool. Nah.
I think we just got to get on board with this. This is what I'm saying. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And,
yeah. I'm all about being cool.
Right. We're not just cold. We're right. cool.
We're cool. And yeah. you know what? You know, coming when you're cool, you also become interested or people become interested in you like, oh, Homeland Security. Have you seen this story, guys? This the U of M software that yep. Homeland Security is interested in. This the it's a software. Steve, did you put this in? I think you might have.
No, Tim did.
No, I did. But how the heck does the software know where this stuff comes from?
I know.
This is scary stuff. And it's right here from the U of M.
And
Graham's alma mater. I mean, come on.
Go my alma mater.
Go for land. Yeah, yeah, Steve's. Yeah.
Well, you know what, though?
It is your alma mater, Steve. You never talk about that.
Steve was an SAE and I was a Fiji.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
Not at the same time, but close.
Yep. There you go. But anyway.
Anyway, so Homeland Security, yeah, they're going to use this U of M software to basically trace the supply chain of virtually everything imported into the U.S., and they say from iPhones to airbags to ingredients and breakfast cereal.
Well, which is interesting, and a lot of this data is already out there. You remember, guys, we were talking a little bit about the stuff that Transvoyant was doing out of Minneapolis here about, you know, providing feeds of, you know, where ships are and cars are and planes are and things like that. This sort of information is a lot of this just needs to be aggregated. But I think we should note that this software was in process. They're working on this software long before Homeland Security became interested in it, I think.
Well, so here's what really bothers me when I read stuff like this. Now, I can see someday where 100% of everything has an RFID tag on it that gets its energy from, you know, light. You know, any photons hitting it is going to light it up. But I'm sure you guys already know this, but only 20% of U.S.-bound cargo that's in containers is even screened for bombs. And there's apparently 9 billion pounds of air cargo that comes in from overseas every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does if the Homeland Security can't even scan and properly look at containers coming in that could contain dirty bombs or God knows what, how the hell are they going to take care of the supply chain for food ingredients? I mean,
they got a computer program for it, Steve. You can track it.
Oh,
yeah.
I lost my head.
You just sit around in your Homeland Security pajamas and you watch.
That's right. That's right.
You know what creeps me out though is a little bit is the name of it. Doesn't that
Crystal?
Crystal.
Crystal. Yeah.
Doesn't that All sound a little? Doesn't it sound a little Big Brother-ish?
It sounds like what a Bond villain would use. You know.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like very Spectre.
Well, it probably means crystal clear or something.
It's some convoluted acronym, I almost guarantee you.
Yeah, sure.
Yep. I'd love to know what it stands for, because that's one long acronym.
No kidding.
No, anyway, so that's good, I suppose. That it's happening at the U. Yeah. It's happening here in the North.
In the North. Well, another thing's north. Happening in the North. The North has taken over the West, because our pal Julio at the Pioneer Press did an article on how Egan-based down there south of me,
north of me,
Ergotron announced Wednesday it's acquiring Anthro. Now, if nobody knows, you know, ergonomic desks and stand-up desks and things of that nature, both of them are in the space, and they have a lot of complementary products. There's some overlap stuff, but Anthro, they were like an advertising machine. I saw them everywhere. You know, they're on all these tech sites and blogs, and they're in the back of magazines.
You won't see them in Sky Mall anymore. They're going bankrupt.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Which is probably a story. I don't know why we don't have that covered here. We should really talk about that. That is going to kill a good 20, 30 minutes of my flight right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Without Sky Mall. So anyway.
Tell me about it. We got to get more Wi-Fi on planes, man.
Yeah, free Wi-Fi.
It is not enough.
So anyway, Ergotron is Ergotron's actually owned out of a company out east, right? Isn't that right?
I don't know the answer to that.
They're actually owned by another company. So, but they're sort of all coming together. And I think this is great because, you know, we're opening up the new office. And so I'm kind of looking for a resource for some stand-up desks. And I completely spaced Ergotron.
So. Well, you should just get an account at Home Depot and, you know, get some milk crates and they sell all kinds of doors over there.
Some 2x4s.
Yeah.
Some cinder blocks. Yeah.
What the hell, man?
That's right. Yeah, we're going to go dorm room chic.
I'm seeing the stand-up desk thing everywhere. It's just, it's coming everywhere. Did you see the IKEA $500 electric one now that's kind of broken the barrier of price?
No.
Gizmodo posted on that. I'll put the link in the show notes. But $500 is getting to be pretty good for an electric, you know, that you can raise and lower at will.
I'll put a link in the show notes to one that I'm probably going to buy. I've been sort of researching them over the last week, and it's called Veradesk.
And it's the one that sits on top of a desk.
Sits on top of it.
Yeah.
Yep. And so you can, if you decide you want to stand up, you just lift the handles up and then it raises up.
Right.
And if you want to sit back down, you lower it and sit down. And it doesn't really impact too dramatically the look and feel and so on of your desk.
The IKEA one is called Bkant.
It's called what?
Bkant. You know, they always name something.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Sort of Finlandish or Swedish. It's Swedish for friend. So there you go.
Interesting.
Just let's see. The base model is $489. Hello. Jeez. Wow.
There you go. Yeah.
That.
Well, yeah. But look at these ones that they have. They're like, you know, $4,000. I mean, it's pretty expensive stuff.
Yeah. Oh, the Ergotron stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. With the Anthro. I'm looking at the Anthro stuff.
Yeah. It is very expensive stuff. So I agree. I think that I'm with Graham. Look at this, man. This is going to be a boon for IKEA.
Hey, I built one for my my treadmill a few years ago and tweeted about it for like $25, but it doesn't go up and down, but I can put my laptop or my iPad on a surface while I'm on the treadmill.
Hack IKEA guys have always had something like this.
Oh yeah. So Graham, how many rolls of duct tape did you have to use?
Well, you know, that's interesting. It was not easy because the arms of the treadmill are kind of curved. I had to get real creative with a little bit of duct tape, some shim, and some support boards underneath. But it looks pretty good. I went out and bought one of those, I don't know what they are, shelving oak, you know, simulated oak shelving boards. Yeah, and just got the old jigsaw out and went nuts. Had to cut a lot of corners and so forth, but it worked. I still use it.
Well, my daughter, who constantly berates me for some of the stuff, like it, we have this beautiful exercise room that's all, we had it finished when we finished our lower level, and I had a TV with a swing arm that comes out, and behind it is this rat's nest of wires and all that, because I haven't figured out how to hide all that stuff. And the Apple TV sort of hanging down, you know, plucked into the back, and I've got, you know, twist ties that are holding it up and all of that. And she's like rolling her eyes, "Dad, that is so ghetto." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, that's racist." And she goes, no, it's not. I mean, she's like the least racist human being I've ever met, but she just like laughs at me because I'm a duct tape fan and a bungee cord fan. And, you know,
gotta do it.
The old spit and baling wire.
That's right.
That's what you're all about. Gotcha.
I'll post a photo of my stand-up treadmill.
All right.
Quote unquote desk.
So with the segue into this next article is the fact that I'm sure that the Fickens household was glued to the set during the State of the Union.
Oh,
lots of applause, standing up, clapping, and so forth. No? Well, Julio wrote a blog post on his tech blog about Obama report credits Minnesotans. And, there's a lot about the woman that he met with at Matt's bar and has had out a few times, but there were a few others.
I thought you'd like the broadband networking thing.
Yeah,
that was. Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows if any of that stuff's ever going to happen, right?
But good. I mean, it seems like the tide is turning and that people think that the government running the internet is a good idea. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, we'll,
there's
we'll
a few
see.
Out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the gist of this municipal, internet, which has never been successful anywhere it's been tried, but.
Yeah. Well, it's tough for them to keep on top of it and
stay
abreast and so on. But, all right. Well, let's skip over this and go to the final round.
That was a good one.
Final round of 40, 40 under 40 honorees were named. And
I didn't know there was a previous rounds.
Yeah. I didn't find any of our names on this list.
Are we in the 60 under 60?
Maybe so.
They got it to 50 over 50. I've told them that for years and they ignore the publisher ignores me every time.
Really?
Get past it, Graham. You're irrelevant now. You're over 40. So
this 40 under 40 thing gets really tedious. The one thing they never tell you that I always want to know when I scan the list is how many of these people nominated themselves?
Pretty much all of them, probably.
I think so. And, you know, but at least we saw one startup represented in there. And,
Lead
you know,
Pages, yeah.
It surprised me. Adrian Pierce is with Lead Pages now. I didn't know that. She's our main coordinator for, you know, Mini Demo Mini Bar. So
yeah,
she certainly should be called out as an outstanding contributor to the community for that. But I didn't realize they listed her as being with Lead Pages. So she must have just joined them in recent months. I wasn't aware of that. So good for her.
Huh. What do you know?
We got one tech startup person represented on the list anyway.
And Jeff Aiken is there. Jeff has been doing a lot. I actually just saw Jeff yesterday at the social media breakfast on video. So he does a lot of video work and things like that. So,
Well, there's a woman I know of who's also on the list, Meredith Moore Crosby, who's she's does something with strategic stuff at 3M Gives. So it's their philanthropic arm. So it's interesting because the list is not just comprised of business people.
No,
you know, this guy is St. Paul area Chamber of Commerce and Minnesota Public Radio, University of St. Thomas. So
it's an interesting cool community. Group. Yeah.
Yeah.
Community-wide thing, a lot of nonprofits and that kind of thing. So it's different every year, but I didn't know a lot of these folks this year. So
really,
I'm glad they called themselves out.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're interested in going to see the 40 under 40 at their big reception party, it's just $100.
Oh, what a bargain.
And that's standing room only, I just want to point out to you.
Wow.
Well, I'm sure it's top shelf booze will be served.
Doubt it. Yeah, probably a cash bar, stud. So I wouldn't
really
count on that.
Summit IPAs and
Exactly.
Those are pretty good.
So speaking of Minnesota, did you guys see the story about how the Sophia Fund, the woman led angel group, raised nearly $4 million, and it's going to top out at $5 million in the next few months to invest more in early stage women-led ventures. This is their second fund. So this is Sophia Fund 2.
Well, who have they funded? Do you know?
You know, I can't name them off the top of my head. They might be named on the new Sophia Fund website.
Oh, okay.
Not sure. But they do have active portfolio companies now. I'm not sure how many. I thought I saw a number like 7-ish or something like that, but I'm not sure. But I'm actually in the middle of doing a post on this, an interview with Barb Stinnett, whom I know well, one of the ladies in the fund. And I know a couple of others too, Joy Lindsay and Dee Thibodeau. And these are pretty high-powered ladies who have run their own business or been senior executives, operating executives. And in the case of Joy, she's, you know, got her own VC firm called StarTech Investments. So they're an interesting group. And this is good news for the women entrepreneurs that don't get a really large share of the early stage money out there. And the news release that they put out cites a very low number, like 9 to 13% or something like that, according to a recent study. So it's good. It's good for the community. And there are plenty of great women entrepreneurs in this town, some yes. really good ones that have gotten some good businesses going already. I mean, just I'm talking in recent years here.
Well, how do you know Dee? Because I met Dee Thibodeau, oh my gosh, 20 years ago through Tom Donahue, who was the Dean of Students at MCAD, Minnesota, Minneapolis yeah. College of Art and Design. And at that point, she had a training company. And so
yes.
now she's yeah. doing a healthcare information services company, Charter Solutions. But, you know, she is the proverbial serial entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah. Well, I met her when she became CEO of one of my clients, which was called EDI Solutions, kind of a predecessor to the whole, you know, SPS commerce thing, which is really based on, you know, EDI technology, which goes back to the 90s. So I met her, you know, briefly there when she took over for the CEO I'd been working with. And that was like late 90s. And, you know, I've kind of stayed in touch with her all along. She's been real active, it seems to me. Well, she was in the Minnesota Software Association, and then that merged with the Minnesota High Tech Association.
Right, right, right.
So I see her at those events. And, yeah, it's a good group of ladies. And, you know, more power to them. Go girls.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Phil.
Huh?
You went to the social media breakfast Friday?
Yeah. All you right. guys never go anymore. You miss it, don't you?
It's, you know, I don't get so those emails. Now. Do you get the emails, Steve? I don't see those anymore. I don't know.
I get them. It's just so doggone hard for me to tear away and leave from Eden Prairie and go to something. And, you know, if I go to something like this, I mean, you know, travel time in the morning is not an issue. But if I go to an event and then I, you know, talk afterwards and then jump in the car and go, I mean, it's the entire morning.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, it's really hard to carve out that kind of time.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's all right. We just talked about you anyway, so it's okay.
Yeah, right. So who was that freaking Borsch?
That Borsch. I hate that guy.
Yeah.
Who was the speaker? Did they do a panel?
It was a large panel on video. Lindsay Gish moderated. As I said, Jeff Aiken was on it. There was somebody from Space 150 on it. Erica Hanna was there. Chuck Olson was there.
Oh yeah.
And it was a good. I got to tell you, it was a 7-person, maybe 8-person panel. And I was talking to Lindsay before the event, and she was saying, it's like, oh my God, this is such a huge panel. And yeah. I thought, you know, I'm not a big fan of large panels because nobody really gets a chance to speak. And sometimes it's just too unwieldy, but she did a really good job. And I thought that the panel was very informative, talked a lot about, video and the use of video and social media. And, here's the one thing that I took umbrage with was there were many on the panel were big fans of the, you know, making sure your videos are set on autoplay.
No.
And I'm going, do you realize how many people you piss off with autoplay? And then they, you know, that they did make an interesting point that autoplay for Facebook is it defaults to mute. So that is the one saving grace, I suppose. But still, autoplay in Facebook does in a mobile experience is a pain in the butt.
Well, plus if you're on a limited data plan,
yeah,
that's a problem. Start scrolling and all of a sudden it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
How much data did that just use?
Yeah. That's a good point. Hadn't thought about that. Yeah. I just find it annoying myself.
Yeah, but I don't like it.
Was a good event. It was nice to catch up with a lot of those folks. And that was it was a full event too. And So I kudos to Michael Roventine and his team at Social Media Breakfast for keeping that thing rolling and keeping it relevant and keeping people interested. I think it's great.
Yep.
Everybody except Steve Borsch. Yeah.
It's a time thing.
Well, so. Yeah.
Anyway, so it was a good time. It was had by all. I'll do some looking here and find out when the next one is. And I know they have one already set. And I can't remember the topic, but I do remember thinking, hey, this will be a good topic. So I'll put that up.
Yeah, thanks.
You bet.
Well, I found this only this morning, and it was posted 2 days ago. Which entrepreneurial leadership strategy is right for you? And I found it through my Google News feed, and which I have tagged, you know, for Minnesota Technology and so on. So it's talking about the cowboy leadership model, and it talks about the second leadership model is the Silicon Valley style of leadership. And then the third is called Emperor Entrepreneurship, and it's the Minnesota style. It's like, whoa, wait. And so I read this and was like, Minnesota doesn't have the natural resources of Texas or the high-tech magic of Silicon Valley, but there's been great companies built by emperor entrepreneurs like Dick Schultz and Earl Bakken, you know, did Medtronic, and Glenn Taylor and so on. And I thought that was really interesting, but boy, it is, you know, the sole singular entrepreneur who is the driving force that builds the mega company. It just doesn't seem to be the model anymore. It's such a collaborative world. You guys agree?
Well, yes and no. I have had the good fortune of working for two of these gentlemen. Dick Schultz in a contractor role, but Earl Bakken, you know, early in my career. This post only names living emperors.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one that would jump out that is no longer with us is Bill Norris of Control Data, yeah, whom I also work for.
Yeah.
So I had the very good fortune early in my career of working for both him and his company, and Earl Bakken and his company, both highly intrapreneurial, if you will, firms. And the example that they gave and infused down through their organization is no small thing. So, you know what I mean? They weren't like iron-fisted kinds of dictator people at all, you know, although they had their their ways, I'm sure, from time to time. But I've never really heard them accused of that. But the entrepreneurial spirit that they gave to their people cannot be denied, you know. And the number, just those two companies, and if you throw Best Buy in there, think of the thousands and thousands of companies that have been spawned out of that history, if you will, those early pioneering companies. So I think this is kind of cool. I mean, it can be thought of as a model, I guess, in a historical sense. But and the same could be said of Silicon Valley too. I mean, there are plenty of people like this out there. I mean, you know, what did, you know, well, Steve Jobs and Scott McNeely and friends at Sun, and, you know, and Bill Gates, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, but I don't know. What do you guys think about that? You know, the legacy of Medtronic and Control Data, and, you know, Taylor Companies, for that matter. I mean, they've established themselves pretty strongly too here in the state.
I'm not sure. Emperor style entrepreneurship is. You could read into it so many different things, guys. I don't, entrepreneurship is entrepreneurship, and it tends to be a sort of a guided by single vision thing anyway, no matter what you say. And yes, you can collaborate, but I think there's usually one single vision, and that originates with at least just one person. So there's always that leadership situation. So how's that for a nebulous answer?
It was an interesting find though, Steve. Good post.
I like
that. I just thought it was interesting.
And I want you to know, while I was looking at that post this morning, I got a little pop-up for one of their other stories. And have you guys seen this black tie, or excuse me, the Black Tux startup?
It's the Black Tux?
Yes, it's the BLK Tux. It's basically Tux, an online suit rental.
No.
What does this have to do with anything?
Nothing, but I just thought it was kind of cool. Have you ever thought about anybody renting a suit for the day? I mean, yeah, you rent a tux, but did you ever rent a suit for the day?
Well, for interviews, you know, grads might be really into this, but suits, are you kidding me?
I don't know. It's I find it interesting because, yes, there are a lot of people that don't have suits anymore. You know, think about it, Graham, you know, we spent a day at Coco, not a lot of suits in that room.
No. So,
And I would be willing to bet that more and more kids graduating from college don't own them.
Oh, they buy them for a wedding, maybe if they have to, but they'd much prefer to rent them. I'm sure.
There you go, Tim. I just tied it in with entrepreneurship. How's that work?
I guess it seemed like out of left field here.
Yeah, it did. I'm sorry. Well, it was.
You didn't even say they were the Uber of tux rental.
The Uber of tux rental. That would have made it cool.
Yeah, it would have. Yep.
But they're billion not. Dollar startup.
It doesn't appear that they have a mobile app, so they're not even the Uber of it.
They're not even Uber. Well, yeah, it's only a matter of time, right?
It's disruptive, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and when you get to
it disrupted this podcast.
It's disrupting the men's warehouse.
Yeah. Well, and they got to start delivering them by drone. You know,
there you go.
We're talking, baby.
Oh, God. Wow. We've gone off the rails now.
Yep. So, Windows 10. There's been some preview copies of Windows 10 out and getting rave reviews, as it were.
Looks good.
It looks. It actually does look good.
Actually,
I've got Windows 8.1 in my running in Parallels, and I'm going to upgrade that to Windows 10.
Well, good for you.
Just for
good deal.
Shits and giggles. So
shits, gets and jiggles.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I look at it and I think all of us, well, maybe not all of us, but I was first introduced to computers in the world of DOS and was become, very enamored with, obviously used a lot of Windows, in my life, but nothing, I just look at this and nothing will woo me back to a Windows machine. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
It's just like, I just won't go back.
Well, if there's a lot of bugs, though, I think that's the thing that's going to drive people back. If OS X all of a sudden becomes less reliable, and it is moving in that direction, then they've got an opportunity, and they've got a lot of good ideas in here. I like the idea to go and have one device that has multiple uses, so you can do a desktop and then go into tablet mode and all of that. I think that's pretty smart.
Well, one thing I did notice was they've knocked off, like everybody's doing now, knocked off some great features like OS X's notifications slide out and things of that nature. And they're redoing the browser with Project Spartan. So they're going to have both that new web browser and the current Internet Explorer 11, or are they going to upgrade that too? I didn't see this. So they'll have actually two browsers in Windows 10, because I'm sure that Project Spartan will do everything that everybody wants. So you still need to have the fallback.
Why don't they just do WebKit?
Because they're Microsoft.
Yeah, they got to do their own thing.
They got to do their own thing.
God forbid.
Yep. Well, they got to make life difficult for all the web developers in the universe.
No shit.
They're the empire, man.
Yeah.
But it didn't. Never considered that the evil empire, but it's like, God, Internet Explorer is just a piece of crap.
So. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I threw in here as a link, just because it's Microsoft related, kind of, is a really interesting segment on the Charlie Rose Show, where he interviewed Bill and Melinda Gates on philanthropy and where things are going in the future and all of that. And he's not going to be remembered as a robber baron. He's going to be remembered as a man who, did what Carnegie did, after his ruthless steel cornering of the market and so on. Carnegie became a philanthropist.
Oh, okay. I was going to say. Yeah,
Andrew Carnegie.
And I thought it was Carnegie.
Okay. Carnegie.
It's Carnegie.
No.
Yeah.
I've never heard that in my life.
Okay.
I have.
That's how he pronounced it.
PBS. Well,
but he's been dead for years. We'll PBS pronounce it the way we want to pronounce it.
PBS, PBS has been mispronouncing it for years.
So. All right. But anyway, so I put a link in there. You can watch that. But
I was going to say, don't you just love the Andrew Carnegie libraries that are sprinkled around?
Oh, yeah. There's a fabulous one in Two Harbors.
Oh, yes. And how about the one in, is it Bayport or where is it along the river? There's a really cool looking one. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We've got them around the state.
Yeah. Hey, Tim, I see you put in something about Freedom Pop turning on unlimited Wi-Fi across the U.S. And
yeah, I thought this is interesting.
What about what Google's doing with mobile?
How does that tie into this?
Well, because they're Freedom Pop turning that on for $5 a month gives them incredible access to people who are roaming, right?
Yeah, true.
And so wouldn't that be a good thing to be able to do some interesting tracking and so forth?
You could, but I think that this is just a budget way for, people to have a Wi-Fi, a Wi-Fi subscription that works, I think they said 10 million hotspots, something like that. So quite a few places across the country.
Yeah.
A lot of those are free hotspots already.
Right. Right.
The Starbucks, yeah. and the McDonald's and things like that. So all of a sudden you're paying $5 for something that you've been using for free.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. These guys are doing some interesting things. So, you know,
there's a lot of stuff like Phil, when you go into airports, as you know, trying to get on and the kinds of things you have to pay if you want a more than an hour access with a bunch of ads. Yeah. So
right.
This could be a good thing.
Yeah. And you end up at an airport and you don't know, do they really have free Wi-Fi here or how do I get on it? Do I have to look at ads first or what's going on? It's like, I've got 15, 20 minutes maybe of time that I can spend to catch up on email. And it's like, I just want to get on quick. I don't want to go through this discovery process. If I were a more frequent traveler than I am, which thankfully I'm not, but if I would pay $5 a month just to be able to do things quicker in airports, you know what I mean?
Right.
Well, seriously.
I see that Steve just threw in the Boingo
Wireless. Boingo. Yeah.
They're super expensive though.
They are.
I've tried that. I don't like that. Yeah.
Well, so it was started by Sky Dayton. It started Earthlink. Yep. And, I got to tell you that at one point when the family, when we traveled overseas, we're in Germany and I had signed up everybody for Boingo Wireless and it didn't work anywhere. Seriously. I mean, it was just like, wow.
So not only did you pay top dollar, you got no service.
Basically. I mean, here are both of my kids. My wife didn't really care, but both of my kids are like, dad, this just sucks. It doesn't work. Oh man. I didn't hear the end of that one. So we'd be looking for Starbucks in different places so that we could go in and use their Wi-Fi.
Oh, absolutely. So,
yeah. Okay, so what's this story? First of all, who's Asymco, Asymco? And the story is called Bigger Than Hollywood.
Yeah, you don't know Horace, did you?
I don't.
Oh, yeah.
So
refresh our memories. Yeah.
What? Yeah. So he does a podcast.
He's the author. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he's an analyst. He used to work at Nokia.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And now he's has a consulting company called Asymco, and his basic thing is he looks at Apple and then he tries to extrapolate their performance against other people in the industry like Google and Microsoft and, their other competitors.
Yeah.
And so he's the one that has tracked Apple the closest. And what I found interesting is that, this story is that the App Store is bigger than the box office for Hollywood in the U.S. last year.
Yeah, chart.
Actually, quite a large number.
Yep.
So
question though, Tim, does that include purchases through the iTunes store, so video and movies and music.
He does track that, and if you look at his charts, you'll see all of that stuff. But no, that's just the apps. That's just paid apps. Mm-hmm. So that's what Apple paid the developers for those. Wow. So it's a huge business. And then I also stuck in Marco Arment's post that he put up a week or so ago about Overcast, his podcast app. And
I thought that was a good one.
Yeah, and it's interesting to kind of look behind the covers and see that people are making quite a bit of money for, you know, doing these apps, and you can do it as a single person like Marco does. You know, you don't have to have a company with lots of developers like our buddy Phil does.
Yeah. Well, you know? so the this Overcast app that you just referred to, Tim, it's my favorite podcast app.
Yeah, no, he did a good job on it.
Good job, but the quality's really good. Mm-hmm. You know, and I paid the $5. It's like, whatever. I mean, apps are so cheap, I think. You know, most of them are anyway. But, you know, if you spend $5 for an app, it's like, what, seriously? I used to go in and buy shrink wrap software for $49.95 routinely, you know, and you got less. So,
yep.
Yeah, interesting.
Yep, huh. And people pay that for a fancy Starbucks, for crying out loud, you know. Yep. And but then they get free Wi-Fi. Oh, whoopee!
Yeah, exactly. Well, so there this other story that you stuck in here about the Apple Watch and the lack of battery life. I mean, this was, people were really buzzing about this.
Yeah, I thought that the, what did it say, 3 hours of use or something? Yeah. But I know you're not going to constantly go down and look at your watch. But that seemed very low to me.
No, I think that's, you know, depending on what's coming out, you know, the Pebble doesn't last very long if you use it a lot. So it works fine.
Doesn't it last, you know, several days before you have to charge it? Isn't it kind of like a Kindle in that respect?
If you just use it as a watch, yes. But if you are actually running programs on it, no.
Oh,
so
okay.
You're using it a lot. No, it doesn't last that long. So but I think that, you know, their targets are trying just to figure out a way to make that all work. So,
well, but it's just like when you get a new phone. I mean, when I got the iPhone 6, I mean, I'm on this thing all the time. And even though I have my brightness turned down to 50% and I force quit apps like crazy, so nothing's running in the background. You know, after I'm looking at it a few times, it seems all of a sudden, it's like at 85% battery. It's like, whoa, I could never make it through the day. I'd have to charge.
Well, and the six plus, which I have, is really, really good. So key point, size of device, size of battery is a major determinant of the life of the battery, the life of the charge. And, you know, the battery size in an Apple Watch is not very big.
Are you saying size matters?
Oh, yes, I am, by golly, in a lot of ways. But you know, battery technology is really not advancing as it needs to. And there's billions and billions of dollars being spent in this. But I got to say that I trust that Apple's on the leading edge of what's available. I mean, they've got that. I mean, what technology is available to get the most out of that little battery?
Yeah.
Now, will it be better a year after the watch is introduced? Yeah, it probably will be. I mean, how many people do you think they employ, Steve, out in Cupertino on battery technology? I mean, it's got to be a large number.
Yeah. Well, look at the, when they revealed the investment, and the size of the room that they just do testing in for the phone, you know, the soundproof room. And you looked at this thing and it was the best testing facility of its kind anywhere in the world. They're not bashful about figuring out how to maximize every aspect of it. Cause you know, Apple's not stupid. I mean, none of these vendors are, you know, they're going to try to make the best possible battery, extension that they can, you know, in terms of length of time. And I just think that Apple should totally just forget about iPhones and all that kind of stuff and actually start making life-size statues of Bigfoot. This, Phil, did you put this link in here to the Sky Mall?
No, I didn't. I think I'm guessing that was Tim. So.
Yeah, I did this just to make Phil happy.
I didn't realize that Sky Mall was going bankrupt. Sold this life-size statue of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're not, if you can't sell enough of them, you go bankrupt.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, I was always amazed how I absolutely never purchased anything.
Yeah, but you always read it, you know?
Yeah, always went through it, sure.
They had the most outlandishly crazy products.
Yeah.
You know? And they were at top dollar as well.
Well, like I say, yeah. We better be getting more Wi-Fi on planes if we don't have that to flip through, you know? But
I know.
So many planes. I don't know. How are you guys? Every plane I ever get on doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Oh, really?
I don't fly Delta a lot. Delta's pretty good, I guess, but you do pay a premium for Delta tickets pretty much to any destination. Yeah. But I asked the Sun Country flight attendant on my recent flight out to Vegas or on my way back, and I'm going to stop asking on Sun Country because they aren't doing it.
Nope.
And she told me, she said, you know what the dollar figure was that they were going to have to put down to do this on the fleet? And the fleet's not that big. It was like $7 or $8 million. So she said, you know, they can't do it. They, you know, but it's mostly leisure travelers on Sun Country. So, you know, but I'm longing to do Wi-Fi on planes and I'm happy to pay for it, but so many of them just don't have it on board.
Well, I don't know if you guys ever saw it, but I'm putting a link in the show notes to a parody site called SkyMall, MAUL, home of the condo pony. That was their big claim to fame, as the number one product they had was a condo pony. And they show this stock photo of some people in there, and you can buy this tiny little pony for $456.
Good it's God. Just,
honest to God. Honest to God. And then they had a huge map, Nazi Grandpa Locator. Grandpa Helmet sort of disappeared after 1945. Now you can teach your kids about his likely whereabouts.
Oh, my God.
So it's humorous. But, of course, this will go away. You can't parody something that doesn't exist anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So
that gig's over.
Too bad. Too bad. Well, yeah. All of us are using LastPass, right?
Yep.
All right. So who downloaded the app?
I did.
I did.
Okay.
It's good.
Not exactly sure what I can see it's doing. I can't find it now that I've downloaded it. So.
Oh, well, it's
look at the downloads folder.
No, I mean, as far as after I install it, you hit the LastPass installer and it installs it on your browsers, which I already have.
Oh, no, browser. You got the wrong one. You have to go to the Apple App Store and get it there.
The Mac App Store.
Yeah. And gotcha. It's a standalone app. And if you're running it on a desktop like I do, it's kind of not as useful. But if you have a laptop, you have all of your logins and everything in a nice interface that you can use offline. So that's the big advantage.
The offline piece is big.
If you're on your transatlantic flight with bad Wi-Fi and you need that password, you'll like this.
Or if you do what I do, which is my wife and I share passwords, and there are times when I want her to enter a password that I've got, and you know it's some super long string. And so it's really nice to be able to use, the Mac operating system to just share stuff, AirDrop, you know, anyway.
Yep.
And so I thought you can this do would stuff be like that, but I'm not using it on a daily basis because I've got the browser plugin and I just load my vault in the browser.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I do too. Yeah. Yep. But I thought this would be a good segue, Steve, because I think we need some more horses.
Oh, you mean it's time for...
Incredible.
It is time for Steve's Security Tip of the Week.
Wow. No horses at all.
No horses at all.
No.
Oh my God.
Now horse free.
All right, so here's my Security Tip of the Week. Brian Krebs, the guy that broke the Target story. I follow him closely, and And he had a post this week, a flash patch targets zero-day exploit. Now, zero-day exploit is one that there hasn't been a patch for, right? So that it's still open and it's still in the wild. And Adobe did release an important security update for Flash Player that fixed a vulnerability already being exploited in attacks. But another blogger, and I'll put a link in here too, that they found a new one, still unpatched, just discovered by another security researcher, Caffeine, which is being actively sold within a malware kit called AnglerEK. And so Flash is vulnerable. And, you know, it, some time ago, I just went ahead and uninstalled Flash altogether. So here are your choices if you want to remain protected. The vulnerability is in Windows, Mac, or Linux. It's in Firefox. It's in all the Internet Explorer versions. And so you can either A, yes, install the latest and greatest Flash Player. Now, Chrome and also Internet Explorer, the latest versions, 10 and 11, auto-install and keep it updated. But if you want to make sure that everything else is updated, especially if you're running other browsers, you can install the latest and greatest Flash Player. And I'll put a link and you can just choose your version and go for it. Or you can do what I did some time ago, which is you can uninstall Flash Player altogether. And I'll put some info in here about how to do that. And I find that, you know, 99% of the time, it's just when I'm in Facebook that somebody puts some link in there to a video that's a Flash video. I don't miss it at all. And it's just so damn insecure that I'm not going to use it anymore. And that's my tip of the week.
All right. That's a news flash.
That's right.
Sounds like a commercial for Chromebooks to me.
Yeah, it could be. Could be.
The cloths come out. The cloths come out.
Indeed.
All right. So now we got to talk about our cool things of the week. I this is becoming my favorite segment, guys, because you come up with stuff that I just has never crossed my radar screen. I love it. So Phil, let's start with you, pal.
Well, yesterday I was at, like I said, I was at the social media breakfast and Chuckumentary was there. Chuck Olson was there. And he had his Android or Samsung Gear VR headset.
Oh, really?
And it's basically, you put a Samsung device into this headset and you get that virtual reality. It's a partnership with Oculus, I guess.
So it only works with like a Samsung phone?
I believe so. Or the right size phone. Yes. You have to, of course, okay. It's made by Samsung for God's sakes.
Damn. Well, no. Yeah, no. Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, and so I didn't have a chance to try it there yesterday, but I am intrigued and I think it is a cool thing. So I really want to take a look at it. I mean, I've spent just enough time with the Google Cardboard that I was enamored with that. So I'm kind of anxious to see what this Gear VR looks like.
Well, believe it or not, I used the Oculus Rift in Rome. My son and I went to a video game museum and they had an area in there where you could go in and this young woman would help you with the goggles on and so forth, and would encourage you to stand up and also encourage you to look around and so on. Mm-hmm. And even though the demo was kind of cool, you were in this space station and you were going along this track and it was very cool. But what I looked at with that is that's my holodeck. The holodeck that I want so desperately is going to happen through the Oculus. I mean, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that's neat that Samsung is.
Did you get nauseous at all? Did you get nauseous?
I didn't.
Good.
No, not at all. So, Mr. Tim.
Yeah, I saw this on Twitter this week. It's called Pluto TV. And what's interesting is it's a web video live kind of linear programming like broadcast is, but it's all internet stuff. Cool. And it's all running live. And they have an app, I think also iOS, but the Android app I've used, and it supports Chromecast, so you can Chromecast this stuff to your TV to watch it there. But it's a very interesting interface, very interesting that they've taken the broadcast model and applied it to internet videos, and that they've programmed it time-wise to run live, so you can have that same experience that you do flipping around channels.
That's pretty cool. Channel guide.
It's a good idea. It lets you, if you sign in with your Facebook or you sign up, it allows you to put your interests in. So you only see the stuff you're interested in, you know, like news and tech and whatnot. So it's a crazy but also good idea, I think.
It's not loading for me on the line. It just keeps flip, 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 flip.
Oh, really? For me, this would be a great way to watch surfing videos.
Says loading channel, and there it just keeps scrolling, yeah, and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling.
Well, it's early days yet. I mean, this thing just came out, so.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's worth checking out.
So, Graham, what's your cool thing, pal?
Well, you know, if you're into drones, have you heard about this ghost drone?
No.
It's the drone for everyone, supposedly the easiest one to use. You can use it right out of the box. What a lot of people may not know is that, you know, if they're thinking about getting a drone, is they're not real easy to get going with, you know. It can be an issue to learn how to fly these things.
Well, and then you also see those videos where guys are like diving into a pond to rescue their drone that's coming down because they can't.
Yeah, I love that video.
Talk to Bill Hyman, who lost one in a swamp somewhere, and I don't know that he ever recovered it. And there goes, you know, $1,200 or $1,500.
Right.
You know, so this one's down there $500. And it was an Indiegogo project, but they appear to be selling them elsewhere now. So I'm assuming, you know, they've succeeded in getting them out there, but I'm not really sure about that. Here's one. It's popping up on Newegg for $599. I don't know what's going on here, if you can really get one ordered and shipped right away or not, but go check it out. The Indiegogo site is out there too, and that will tell you whether or not they're shipping, or it says sold out on Indiegogo, but the price is right. And it's apparently from guys that know what they're doing. This is not their first drone rodeo, as they say.
Dronio?
Dronio. But, you know, I don't know if I'm ready to spend $500-$600 yet or not. But, you know, with all the regulations being talked about try to limit citizen droners, who knows? But I think you've got a window of a year or two yet before the FAA comes down on you.
Yeah, right.
If at all.
Do you think your desire to own and invest in a drone is all gauged on how attractive your sunbathing neighbor is, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
Boy, everything comes back to that for you.
Doesn't it? Why else would you have a drone, for God's sake?
Yeah. You know, but the coolest drone shot I've seen in Minnesota is still that one I posted. Gosh, it's got to be a year or two ago now, flying over Split Rock Lighthouse. Have you guys seen that?
No, I'll put a link in the show notes. I'd like to see that.
It is so freaking cool. And of course, it's a national park, or is it a state park? Whatever. They came down on that guy big time, and it's like they do not want that happening again. But he was one of the early drone users up there, and it was winter time, and he put it to some fascinating music. I'll post it.
Yeah, so, that'd be great.
It's nice. Fun.
Well, so my cool thing is something called the Stocks. And so first let me explain that what's happening is there's a number of different sites that are putting up very high quality imagery. Some are under the Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, so you need to say who took it and so on, provide a link. But most of them are, here are the photos, do whatever you want with them, which I find very interesting. And one of them is called Startup Stock. And so rather than put, you know, 15 links in the show notes, this site, The Stocks, is an iframe. And so on the left side is the menu of all the different stock photo sites that are doing this. And they load in the right side, and you're off and running. Download the photos, and It's really useful. So I just thought that was pretty cool.
And there's absolutely no
read. Like I say, always when I talk to people about music, video, or imagery, or anything that they take off the web, is understand what fair use is all about, but also read the licenses, because they'll tell you right in there, you know, this is free for commercial or personal use. Do whatever you want with it. I mean, it literally says that when you go to download, or it'll say Creative Commons attribution license. This is what, you know, you need to attribute it to the photographer, or something else. But all these sites are, none of these are traditional copyright. So
I could see you using this Bigfoot shot in the artwork.
I've already done that.
This has got you written all over it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is where you got the photos for the funny little Minivate Podcast Studios email you sent to us earlier this week, isn't it?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're good, Phil.
Fun.
You should be an investigative journalist.
Well, no, you and I both, you know, tend to gravitate towards old black and whites. So I
love them.
It's fun.
It's fun. All right. Upcoming events. Graham, I saw you feverishly putting in some new events. What's new in here?
Well, Mobilize Minnesota is having a holiday party. And I said to Matt Pasi, I said, wait a minute. The holidays already happened, Matt. I mean, post-holiday party. And there you go. Oh, okay. Yeah. That works. They're getting it in before the end of January. It's Monday night at Startup Venture Loft? I think that's where they're doing it.
I don't know. It just gave an address. So.
Yeah, the Warehouse District on First Avenue. I think it's the new digs of Startup Loft, but I'm not totally sure. But 5:30 and, you know, drinks and beer and... It's a meetup and there's already 80 some people registered. So
wow,
I think I might drop in.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Then there's another one, that I dropped in, which is over at one of my favorite historical spots in the Twin Cities at the JJ Hill Reference Library, which they just called the J.
Building.
Yeah. Oh, it's just amazing. They call it the JJ Hill Center now because libraries are sort of out now, I guess. They told me books are
libraries are out now.
But they're trying to turn it into an event center. Well, they do. I've been to a wedding there. It's a great place for a wedding. But it's the 26th of February, so it's a ways out there yet. But it's When to Hire Outside Help, A Guide to Outsourcing for Small Business. And it's a free breakfast event that morning of the 26th of February. So that's what I added that's new.
Okay.
But there's some other great ones coming up too, of course. You know, date night, the Mini Analytics Carlson School event, right, on February 3rd. It's waitlisted now, but don't worry. You know, there's always, with any free event, there's always a certain number of just no shows. So go ahead and waitlist yourself for that. It'll be easily 300 to 400 people at that thing. And there's, you know, there's a beer networking reception afterwards and lots of cool people talking about how, data science leads to I do. It's all about, the data part of online dating, which is quite a science.
Very nice.
So, yeah. And then mini demo, of course, on the 5th. You guys.
Don't forget about IoT Fuse and Mobile March.
That's right.
Coming That's right. March.
Coming in March.
In March.
Looking out a couple months. That,
you know, yeah. Phil, you should consider doing it in April next year. Still calling it Mobile March.
I think that would throw everybody off. It's kind of like turning a billboard upside down. Yeah, I think it's a marketing ploy is what it is. Yeah, that's it.
But you could have just little tin soldiers. And
yeah, you could change the name to Mobile March, no April.
There you go.
Yeah, I could see the logo now, big cross. Through the
March. Could be long. Yeah. It could be Mobile March, : April Madness, !!
It's crazy.
There you go.
Or Mobile March fooled you. It's in April.
So I just need to just say one thing that is just really weird, just to sort of end this. So when I bought this new iMac, I got the trackpad option because I've never owned it. One of the trackpads, the Apple trackpads. And using it was so uncomfortable that I started almost getting carpal tunnel like feelings in my arm, and I couldn't really do the pixel level precision stuff I wanted. So I thought, okay, well, I'll grab the Apple Bluetooth connection mouse and the Magic Mouse and hook that up. And the thing is so damn slippery.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like, geez, it just, you know, it just didn't work. So I went over to Best Buy and I bought this Microsoft Bluetooth mouse.
Yep.
And it's, I right now have probably gone through 4 or 5 Microsoft mice, but this was the only Bluetooth one. All the other ones have the little dongle that you got to plug into a USB port.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, they're just horrible. And that Microsoft really does a great job on keyboards and mice and, you know, all these peripheral products. I mean, they're really amazing. Anyway, just thought I'd throw that in.
Wow.
For whatever it's worth.
You trying to get a free mouse? Is that the deal?
No, I already bought
it. No, they're good. I use Microsoft mice. They're the best mice out there.
They are.
Huh.
They're virtually indestructible.
Would they be considered mice or in this case, mouses?
Mousies?
Mouses.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, mice.
They'd be actually called input devices. So let's just.
So you're, anyway. I got to tell you, Steve, if you hung with the trackpad, you would like it.
Really?
It takes some getting used to. You do have to, I don't do the swipe. I've taken the swipe out. So, because I was constantly, you know, if you don't go straight up and down it's a problem, but, I really like the trackpad now. It has been the most comfortable for me, but I do understand the issue of getting that really sort of pixel, level control. It's not there. It's just not there.
Yeah. 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 And I do so much photo work and I do so much, page layout stuff and all that, that I need more control, but
yep.
All right.
All right. Well, that's going to be interesting. We got a lot of stuff coming up next week. I mean, I was actually taking the week off, but I realize now I'm going to spend most of my days downtown. So
there you go.
But we'll cover it next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.